You must read and write as if your life depended on it. Those are the words of the late Adrienne Rich, a feminist, pacifist, and outspoken defender of civil and gay rights, who managed to find inspiration in the conflict for her work.
Poetry is emerging from all the points of stress in the society.
Listen to the past American voice of the late Adrienne Rich with recordings from 1994 and 2002, an American treasure, today on New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam. A writer for six decades, Adrienne Rich produced over three dozen books of poetry and prose after her first award-winning book was published when she was only 22. But it was her third collection, Snapshots of a Daughter-in-Law, published in 1963, the same year Betty Friedan's The Feminine Mystique came out, that established Rich as a feminist poet. The next decade included her surprising book, 21 Love Poems. You'll hear something from that in this 1994 New Letters on the Air archive interview by Rebecca Presson.
Adrienne Rich started her career in the early 1950s when her ability with poetic form won her the prestigious Yale Younger Poets Prize and the praise of such luminaries as W.H. Auden. Rich married and had three children, but as the 60s approached, she says she began to be greatly troubled by her life as a token woman poet in an all-white male world. Rich set about inventing her own model of what a poet could be, writing poems that explored her experiences.
What I'm talking about is more than marriage. Mm-hmm. It's the experience of living in a woman's body, whatever else you're doing, which could include bearing children. It could include heterosexual sexuality from a female perspective. It could include going about the world in a woman's body and being perceived and vulnerable as a woman in the world. Well, I'll read this, which actually came a bit later than Snapshots of a Daughter-in-Law. Women, my three sisters are sitting on rocks of black obsidian. For the first time in this light, I can see who they are. My first sister is sewing her costume for the procession. She is going as the transparent lady, and all her nerves will be visible. My second sister is also sewing at the seam over her heart, which has never healed entirely. At last, she hopes this tightness in her chest will ease. My third sister is gazing at a dark red crust spreading westward. Her stockings are torn, but she is beautiful.
That was Adrienne Rich reading from her 1969 book, Leaflets. As Rich continued her exploration of what it meant to be a woman poet, both she and her work underwent profound changes. She became one of the foremost voices in the feminist movement, and in 1973 published Diving into the Wreck, a book that rocked the literary world and marked Rich's emergence as a lesbian feminist poet who wrote blatantly political and often angry work. Rich has recently published a book of essays about poetry, What is Found There. In the book, she asserts the importance of writers working from outside the mainstream, minorities, lesbians, battered women, and incest victims, for example. As for herself, Rich says she's both an insider and an outsider simultaneously.
You can be inside in terms of class, as I am, and skin, color, outside as a woman, outside as a lesbian, outside marginalized, whatever, as a Jew, but also very much on the so-called inside of a kind of mainstream version of what America looks like and what kind of gender and sexuality and represents, quote, America. I mean, we are a society prone to such myths about ourselves anyway.
Since you brought that up, I noticed that when you republished your selected poems, you named the book after this poem, The Fact of a Doorframe, which is a wonderful poem, which maybe you could read. But I felt like you were making a statement that you are an elegiac poet, and that's why you picked that poem. Is that so?
Elegiac? What does that mean?
Well, because the more recent books, I think, are a little more optimistic. But this poem is a basically sad poem.
I can't label poems sad or optimistic. I think poems are very complex entities. And this is a poem which is about the place of poetry in a life, being like the door frame that you can hold on to when the earth is trembling, which is, of course, a metaphor, but could also be very, very literal, very factual.
I had the feeling that it was the person in the poem was sort of fixed in the frame, too, and kind of going backward and forward and not knowing which way to turn.
No, I don't. I don't think that's in the poem.
All right.
But that may be what you brought to the poem, which is, you know, what you bring. I'll just read the poem. I think that's the best thing.
Yeah.
The fact of a door frame means there is something to hold on to with both hands. While slowly thrusting my forehead against the wood and taking it away, one of the oldest motions of suffering, as Makeba sings a courage song for warriors. Music is suffering made powerful. I think of the story of the goose girl who passed through the high gate, where the head of her favorite mare was nailed to the arch, and in a human voice, if she could see thee now, thy mother's heart would break, said the head of Falada. Now again, poetry, violent, arcane, common, hewn of the commonest living substance into archway, portal, frame. I grasp for you your blood-stained splinters, your ancient and stubborn poise, as the earth trembles, burning out from the grain. Mm. For me, that is a poem about the power of art to be there for us when our worlds are shaking, trembling. And it's about the transmutation of suffering into power.
And that power is in the fact that you are able to interpret what's going on around you? You get to decide what it means?
Well, sometimes, perhaps. But perhaps more even something more fundamental, which is that art, and in the case of this poem, poetry and music, can give us courage. Makeba sings, that's Miriam Makeba, the South African singer, sings a courage song for warriors. And the music can inspire with courage, can render suffering into power.
You're listening to a 1994 interview by Rebecca Pressen with the late Adrian Rich here on New Letters on the Air.
I think that there's a strange tendency to need to see artists as having more tragic lives than other people. Mm-hmm. But in fact, artists have lives that are both as tragic and as joyful as other people, and sometimes more joyful precisely because of the sense of power that creativity can give us. Each one of us, whatever it is that we make, that we create, and I'm not talking about artists only, people who make things happen, like you, have that sense often, and it makes life worth living. Wherever in this city screens flicker with pornography, with science fiction vampires, victimized hirelings bending to the lash, we also have to walk. If simply as we walk through the rain-soaked garbage the tabloid cruelties of our own neighborhoods. We need to grasp our lives inseparable from those rancid dreams, that blurt of metal, those disgraces, and the red begonia perilously flashing from a tenement sill 6 stories high, or the long-legged young girls playing ball in the junior high school playground. No one has imagined us. We want to live like trees, sycamores blazing through the sulfuric air, dappled with scars, still exuberantly budding, our animal passion rooted in the city. Sleeping, turning in turn like planets rotating in their midnight meadow. A touch is enough to let us know we're not alone in the universe, even in sleep. The dream ghosts of two worlds walking their ghost towns almost address each other. I've wakened to your muttered words, spoken light or dark years away, as if my own voice had spoken. But we have different voices even in sleep, and our bodies so alike are yet so different, and the past echoing through our bloodstreams is freighted with different language, different meanings. Though in any chronicle of the world we share, it could be written with new meaning. We were two lovers of one gender. We were two women of one generation.
This is New Letters on the Air, and our guest is poet Adrienne Rich, who read two poems from her 1976 book, 21 Love Poems. Rich says there's a perception that poetry is for scholars. One reason she wrote her new book of essays, What is Found There, is to debunk that notion and to celebrate how language, beautifully used, can make anyone's life better.
I think that words have been so horribly debased also, and are being so horribly debased. Language I see being debased, certainly through the media, through the official media. It's very interesting to me that a lot of people have said to me recently that they've stopped watching television and listened to radio. And while radio can bring you Rush Limbaugh, it can bring you a great deal else. I just find that very interesting. As I describe at the beginning of What is Found There, this thing of turning on the radio and suddenly hearing a voice reading poetry, and how that can bring a poem into your life at a moment when you perhaps needed it but weren't even looking for it. We're in a very strange relationship to language as a society right now. There's a part of it that's just very crude, debased, filled with hate, filled with violence. There is the tremendous increase in people going to poetry readings and to readings of all kinds, wanting to hear language used in a different way. And I know that that's part of the hunger for listening to poets, to writers reading their work, that there is a need to hear language used with precision, with imagination, with a sense of the possibilities of human existence, rather than the denial of those possibilities.
And don't you think that a lot of this anger stems out of the fact that so many new voices are being heard too? I mean, there are so many voices that weren't heard before that are being heard, and that's scary and it's unknown and it ticks people off.
Well, I think that may be true. There's an extraordinary thing going on right now, which is that poetry is emerging from all the points of stress in the society. Poetry is erupting. Poetry is being brought forth, and it's being sought after, too. I've heard so many stories in the last year or two since I was writing this book, What is Found There, about, for example, a juvenile hall where the boys were, of course, on one side of the building. The girls kept on the other. There's a library. In that library, there's a copy of the Oxford Book of English Verse. And the kids would be copying out poems from the Oxford Book of English Verse to send to each other as love missives or what have you. I was talking yesterday with a young woman who's teaching poetry to men in their 40s and 50s who are in a halfway house for men addicted to drugs and alcohol, in which they're producing poetry, which she says is quite astonishing. She's a poet. And she said, I'm learning so much from their poetry. I'm learning more than I'm teaching. And she's also bringing them in poems from, you know, all kinds of places, which they can read. This kind of work is going on in so many kinds of spaces, in battered women's shelters, in homeless shelters, you know, where there is enormous emotional and spiritual need, but not just need for, you know, what one thinks of as uplift or inspiration, but need for the power of the word, need for the energy, the vitality that poetry reawakens in us, which can get crushed out of us.
And that release of having something inside and letting it out, getting it on paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or seeing, perhaps, an experience that you have had that you couldn't even name, named in a poem, given language in a poem by somebody else, as so often happens.
Sure.
I mean, that's happening to me all the time. Sure. I read a great deal of poetry. A lot of the time I'm reading poetry that comes from a whole social and familial and cultural milieu that is not the one that I grew up in, but in which I can recognize elements that, for me, it's very important to see named.
The late Adrienne Rich in 1994 from the Save America's Treasures Archive of New Letters on the Air. Here Rich reads from her book, What is Found There.
From a notebook, March 7th, 1974. The poet today must be twice born. She must have begun as a poet. She must have understood the suffering of the world as political and have gone through politics. And on the other side of politics, she must be reborn again as a poet. And then I go on to say, but today I would rephrase this. It's not a matter of dying as a poet into politics, or of having to be reborn as a poet on the other side of politics. Where is that? But of something else, finding the relationship.
1974, that's just a little bit after you wrote Diving into the Wreck, right?
But I was thinking, I think, when I wrote that, about the politics of the 60s overall, the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, the emergence of the women's movement. And I was trying then, in the early 70s, because I certainly was writing political poetry then, and there was a great deal of political poetry being written in those years and read at public events. I guess I was really starting back then in 74 to try to think about what is the relationship between poetry and politics, mm-hmm. which I really didn't get to write about until I wrote this book, which I started at the end of the Cold War. So I've been, you know, brooding on those questions for a long time.
Yeah, I think a lot of people see that, like, your whole life changed when you wrote that poem. I think it's our lives that changed
what
when you
poem?
Wrote that poem, Diving into the Wreck,
oh.
You know?
No, my whole life didn't change. I've never written any poem that changed my whole life. I think you write poems out of your life and perhaps in the hope of changing it. But I think we change our lives by action. I think we change society by action. and not by words only. Yet words are so necessary, even in order to find out what the action must be at any given point.
But no, isn't part of your debate whether words are action, whether writing a poem is an action equivalent to a political action?
Yes, I think that is a question that has haunted me. And I think the reason that I don't want to say it is because it's so easy to take refuge in language alone. I have known so many people who could speak beautifully on a variety of topics, but who were simply not there when something had to be done.
You can also speak beautifully and lie.
This is true. This is true. Absolutely.
That was what you were going to say.
Well, you can speak beautifully and lie, and that too, and you can speak beautifully and lie to yourself as well as to others. But for me, there's always this dialectic and this tension and also this dialogue between writing and action, activism, that's very fertilizing for me.
Well, you're obviously very involved with a lot of different groups, political groups.
I'm involved with different political communities, yes.
What form does your activity usually take?
It can take the form of speaking, which is words, of speaking up in groups where something is being silenced, where something is not being named, speaking up where, let's say, a racist or homophobic language is being used or jokes are being told or what have you. You know, it can take the form of being on the board of an organization that's trying to do something. I think there's just always a range of opportunities for each of us, and we find out where we can best serve at any given time in terms of where we're placed, what our resources are, what our energy is, you know, many things.
Yeah. Well, I just ask because in what it's found there, you write that your ideal is to have a combination of working in a community and having your own space. And I wondered if you had achieved that pretty much, if you feel pretty comfortable about it. The balance?
Well, I don't know. I feel as though that's always a tenuous balance. I feel that we're living through a time of such crisis in this country that I need very much to feel the sense of community and of connectedness with others. That's what I think helps us survive a time like this.
That was the late Adrienne Rich talking with New Letters on the Air's Rebecca Presson in November 1994. Several years later, Rich refused the National Medal of Arts, our government's highest award for artists, questioning, why honor a few when people at large are so dishonored with racial and economic injustice? She also refused an invitation to the White House Poetry Symposium in protest of the U.S.-led invasion into Iraq. Before that, in 2002, she visited the University of Missouri, Kansas City as a Cockafair Chair speaker. Here's an excerpt.
A little more than a year ago, on September 10th, I gave a reading at University of Missouri in Columbia. The next morning, I was eating breakfast in my motel before being driven to the airport and heard on the radio of the destruction of the World Trade Center in Manhattan. I was due to go on to the University of Minnesota, but all the airports in the country were closed. An arrangement was made so that I'd be driven by a car service for the 11-hour trip to Minneapolis. So my memories of September 11th are of the rural landscapes of Missouri, Iowa, and Minnesota under transcendently blue autumn skies, from the windows of a car driven by a retired fireman from St. Louis. He and I became friends on that long journey, listening to local radio stations and talking of our fears of what was happening and also of what the U.S. government would make of this incalculable event. He was a thoughtful, well-informed man the kind of person I think of as grassroots American. In all the months since, I have been grateful to have spent that day here in the Midwest with a companion like him. And now, here I am in Missouri again, and our nation is facing the possibility of a war against Iraq, to be waged in the name of what? Avenging September 11th, saving the Middle East for United States oil interests, wiping out terrorism, distracting from the economic scandals that taint the White House. What has this to do with poetry? What is poetry but the replenishment of possibilities other than those of arrogant, one-eyed power? I believe that the arts are not some kind of decoration on life, but ancient, powerful, and constantly self-renewing resources of vision and understanding, without which we are stuck with the language and images of marketing, propaganda, and spin, the barren rhetoric of there is no alternative, the vocabularies of fear and paranoia. In my work, I'm trying to celebrate the countercurrents, the underground streams, the waking visions and nightmares of a society which is more various than we know, in which we are part of something larger than our personal predicaments. And in that attempt, I've brought in many voices, some historical, some fictional, none simply my own I.
Those voices became the poetry included in Adrienne Rich's book, The School Among the Ruins, winner of the 2004 National Book Critics Circle Award. Her last collection, published in 2011, was called Tonight No Poetry Is Served. Adrienne Rich suffered from rheumatoid arthritis and died in her Santa Cruz home in March 2012 at age 82. But her consciousness raising continues with the writing she leaves behind. A posthumous collection published in 2018 explores in part what a woman needs to know and is called Essential Essays, Culture, Politics, and the Art of Poetry. Look for a new comprehensive biography, The Power of Adrienne Rich by Hillary Holliday, due out in late 2020. New Letters on the Air is a production of New Letters Magazine, published by UMKC with partial financial support from the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Today's program was part of our Save America's Treasure series, a partnership grant from the National Park Service and the National Endowment for the Arts to digitize our old programs and make them available on our website, newletters.org, which we're happy to announce has been restored along with our free podcast. We're also on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, and Instagram. Today's show was produced with help from Ross Steinmetz, Stephanie Hughes, and Jamie Walsh, with production of the original 1995 show, thanks to Rebecca Presson, Margaret Smith, and the late John Hawken. The final essay was recorded at the Cockafair Chair public presentation at UMKC in 2002. I'm Angela Elam. Thanks for listening to New Letters on the Air.